This is an IEEE Computer Society podcast. I'm David Alan Greer, and this is In Our Time. On anything we do, we always have to face the questions, what do we know and what do we not know? Those issues are explored in today's podcast, which is entitled The Public Eye. Over the years, Ray has made peace with his ignorance. This task has not been easy, as he started his career filled with the enthusiastic naivete. During his college years, he became interested in computer security. He read the classic book by Clifford Stoll, The Cuckoo's Egg, which was about an early hacker infiltration of the computers at Lawrence Berkeley Laboratories. And he also followed the stories of the 1988 Internet Worm. During that time, Ray found one of the very few books on computer security, and he tested the problems that it described on a Unix workstation that he found in somebody's laboratory. He downloaded the password file, gained access to systems commands, he even modified parts of the operating system. He finished the work with the confidence of youth and an eagerness to do battle with the dark shadows of the human soul. Over the next 5 or maybe 6 years, Ray became an investigator of computer invasions, a detective who defended the financial services industry computers against cybercrime. The work took him to 3 continents and exposed him to a large range of machines, both big and small. It also gave him a badge that was heavy enough to stop a .45 caliber slug before it grazed the press of his dress shirt. It also left him with a fistful of stories that you might not want to share with your mother. He explained that it's kind of like being a firefighter. We were sitting in a coffee shop near my office that was filled with young men and young women who were drinking designer caffeinated beverages and appearing deeply involved in their own conversations. When the alarm bell sounds, Ray continued, I jump into my boots, leap onto screaming engines, and boldly engage the fire wherever it may be. Initially, the work had been fun and exciting, but the experience eventually began to drain him. Our systems are under attack all the time, he explained, and the attackers are not good people. His eyes were agitated, his face tired. This is not the Ray I had known. Sure, the big systems are secured, but there are hundreds of ways the hackers can get into a computer. They can break into a contractor's workstation. They can exploit the weaknesses of some local application. We just don't know all the problems that are out there. At the time, Ray's words held the ring of truth. I had seen recently in my own work the security weaknesses of a new financial system that our university had purchased. Despite my protests, and there were many, I was told that I had to be trained on this system. The class was run by a perky young person, the kind of individual who finds inspiration in those corporate motivational posters that feature bold lighting, dramatic landscapes, and slogans like Dare to Exceed. This training session was boring. Boring beyond measure, as we had to be introduced to the system philosophy long before we could be taught any useful commands. Being unengaged in the session, and sitting at a workstation near the back of the room, I started fiddling with the commands. I found that I could easily get to the help screen. From the help screen, it was just a key click away to the system command line. And from there, I could elevate my status to that of a system administrator. I spent the next 2 hours productively emailing my friends. At the same time, I decided that I would notify the system administrator of the security hole in his system. And finally, I sent a few messages to the trainer's scream at the front of the room. They rattled her. But unsure of the source of these messages, The trainer did the only logical thing. She ignored them. "You never know how you're going to get hit," Ray had said to me at the time. "It might come from inside the organization, might come from outside. It might be something that you have never even heard of. My advice to you, to anyone, get the strongest protection software you can find, run it all the time, and expect that you're going to be invaded anyway." Ray had ended that conversation with little peace in his heart. Part of his concern might have come from the fact that he was changing jobs and did not know what the future held. In part, it might also have come from the doubt that eats away at a career. The doubt that suggests you've accomplished little or nothing of value, in spite of all your strong efforts and all of your good intentions. Computer security shares the methods and goals of computer science as a whole, but it has a couple of features that set it apart. First, it presents an unknown target to practitioners like Ray. It's one thing to prepare for uncertainties in business, changes in the regulatory environment, or new operational methods. It is quite another thing to brace for a new attack by novel software from an unknown quarter. Second, computer security has a vulnerable position in the public mind. When done well, it is invisible. When done badly, at least according to modern critics, it calls the entire field of computer security into question, because the public can't distinguish between valid methods of security and those that have yet to be proven. Over the years, Ray has come to the conclusion that the practice of computer security is hampered by yet a third problem, raw embarrassment. Time and again, he'd arrive at a site, flash his badge to the system administrator, and be told that there was nothing to see. The staff couldn't find the infected machine. Or they'd erased the computer's log. Or they'd cleaned its disk. Or they had restored it to an operating condition. As a group, they were often unwilling to admit that they had been attacked by anything, a virus, a worm, or a hacker. Occasionally, the administrators were overcome by the fear that the news of the attack would undermine their investors' confidence. It was an idea they used to justify their actions to themselves and to their superiors. At the same time, it was the kind of lie that has driven the tragic tales of the past 50 years. We're far more likely to be destroyed by hiding an ill deed than by actually committing that deed. If Richard Nixon taught us nothing more, he showed us the perils of the cover-up. In the course of his work, Ray discovered that computer administrators, as often as not, were motivated by unreasoned fear, by ideas unsustained by logic. System managers told him that they resisted reporting intrusions because the culprit might be someone beyond the reach of the law, such as a juvenile or a foreign national, or, in the scenario they feared most of all, someone who would gain publicity and a better position and more business from the notoriety of the incident. Such concerns do have some foundation in reality. The business side of investigating cybercrime is that it really needs to put someone in jail, said Ray recently. Or it needs to provide network intelligence that can be used to protect systems on a large scale. We'd gathered again at my favorite coffee shop to talk about hacking, denial of service attacks, and the other challenges to the modern computer system. A recent incident in Europe had confirmed Ray's historic pessimism about the vulnerability of computers. A network of zombie computers had overwhelmed the machines of an entire country. In spite of this news, Ray seemed remarkably relaxed. Rather than being frightened by an event that many had called the first example of cyber warfare, he seemed calm with the world. "It's not that things are any better," he said. "It's probably that I'm just more used to it. The operating systems are better, which is nice. But the hackers have more tools at their disposal. Once, you needed to understand a system's actual source code in order to exploit it. Now there are software tools that will help you write a worm, create a virus, or even probe an operating system's weaknesses. There are libraries of exploit code for the most popular systems." even with all the changes in technology, Ray added. Each call is more likely to be a porn scare than a real threat against a system. Porn scare, I noted. I must admit that I looked around the room to see if anyone was listening to our conversation. You have to know your porn, he said. We regularly get phone calls claiming that someone is running a child pornography website on an office computer. 99 times out of 100, these reports lead us to an ordinary commercial porn site that is siphoning money from some poor fool's credit card. And there's nothing illegal about that. But even to possess kiddie porn is a felony. So I run through a pornography decision tree to see if we need to investigate. A pornography decision tree? I asked, perhaps indiscreetly. Yep, Ray replied. I don't want to inspect every piece of alleged porn to see if it's legal. So I've created a little series of yes-no questions to reach a conclusion. Do you see any pictures in the site? Are the people clothed? Do the girls have any... I get the point, I interjected. To my eye, the couple next to us had started to take an interest in our discussion. But you can never really be certain about such things. We paused for a moment, and then we moved on to other subjects. Mutual acquaintances, old projects, state of the world. As we talked, I realized that I'd have to abandon one of my plans for portraying Ray and his work. I had hoped to describe him as a Dashiell Hammett character, a Sam Spade, a tough guy detective who used short sentences, active verbs, and phrases that conveyed a deep cynicism with this world. But Ray laughed. And tough guy detectives don't laugh. Ray talked about caring for his parents, and tough guy detectives don't even acknowledge their parents. He talked about hardwood floors that he was getting for his house, something that would have never entered the world of Sam Spade. Yet, Ray's job is still something like that of the hard-bitten detective, especially the one who relies on help from the informer, the unscrupulous cop, the woman in distress. Helps to make a lot of friends in this business, he said, especially friends from other shores. He has friends who will help him preserve evidence, friends who give him access to network logs without a search warrant, friends who point him towards likely suspects. We just finished a major case on a worm attack, he said. Once we got the IP addresses, we found that it had been released by three people, two in the Czech Republic and one in the U.S. Because we have a treaty with the Czechs, we were able to put the two foreigners in jail for maliciously disrupting computer services. At this point, he paused and he grinned. What, I asked. We're going to do the same thing with the American. But we found pictures on his machine, pictures of little naked kids in compromising positions. It's easier to prove possession of illegal materials than to connect a machine with a worm attack. Besides, he added, prison term is longer. He went down for child porn. With that, we turned to the subject of Estonia, the country that had been recently overwhelmed by malicious internet traffic. The dates of the attack were suspicious. They suggested that the Russian government, or maybe a friend of the Russian government, had initiated the attack. The attacks began shortly after the Estonian leaders had removed a Russian statue from a downtown Tallinn and ended on the day the Russians celebrated their victory in World War II. However, the Russian government took no responsibility for the incident, and the meager evidence in the case could point to any one of many possible instigators. Some experts noted that the attack might have been arranged for as little as $100,000 in U.S. money. It might have been arranged by the Russian mafia, a wealthy Russian nationalist, or just some thug who was trying to show how tough he was. No one really knew. You've been listening to In Our Time. This podcast was based on an essay that was published in the January 2008 issue of Computer. More about Computer can be found at www.computer.org. From there, you click on Technical Magazines to find Computer. Other Computer Society podcasts can be found at www.computer.org podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. If you have any comments, please send them to podcasts@computer.org. The music for this podcast came from the Podshow PodSafe Music Network, and we want to thank them. You will find that music at music.podshow.com. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.